Coffee House Shots is sponsored by EDF, Britain's biggest generator of zero carbon electricity. Find out how we are busy helping Britain achieve net zero at www.edfenergy.com.
Hello and welcome to a special Saturday edition of Coffee House Shots. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by James Forsyth, Fraser Nelson and John Kemp, Senior Energy Analyst at Reuters. Energy prices are on the rise, but the government has told us not to panic. Yet, is this a short-term blip or something much more long-term and serious? John, to begin with, can you outline your perspective on what we've seen so far?
Yeah, thank you, Katie. I mean, what we're seeing now is part of a global rise in energy prices, not just in the UK and Europe, but also in the United States and in Asia. And it's not just gas and electricity, it's also the price of coal and it's the price of oil. So it's across the board. What we're seeing in many ways is a reaction to what we had last year. So we had an unprecedented global downturn, a huge slump in energy prices, almost a complete stall in new investment across the energy production system. Then this year, what we've seen is a really exceptional rebound in economic activity, much of that focused on goods rather than services, and goods are more energy intensive. So we've seen a surge in energy consumption, and the energy production sector simply hasn't been able to keep up. So where we had a big cyclical downturn last year in energy prices, we're seeing an equally violent cyclical upturn this year. And that's going to leave energy prices very high over the next sort of 6 to 12 months, not just in the UK, but across the rest of Europe and indeed around the rest of the world.
Fraser, we've heard the government say that the energy price cap will stay, and there's been an effort by ministers to suggest that this is temporary. But what do you think are the warning signs to look for when we're trying to work out long-term damage?
Warning sign number one, try to go for petrol this weekend. You'll see massive queues. They've started already. We've had one petrol company, BP, say it's rationing, basically not because of oil price spikes, but because of HGV delivery. But when you get this sort of panic, things can start really quickly. Also, while it's true that the whole world has seen energy price spikes, we need to remember that Britain's gas prices, for example, are something like 4 to 5 times higher than America's. So everybody is facing increases, but to have it quite as bad as Britain, it's quite unusual. And that's for a number of factors. The Americans started fracking 10 years ago. They've been really digging into their local resources, which we failed to do when we found lots of reserves under Lancashire. We could have, I mean, the north of England could have been the kind of Texas of Europe had we really pursued fracking, but we didn't. We went for decarbonisation rather than security of supply or diversity of supply. Now, to a large extent, this is not a European country which isn't facing headwinds right now, but we, I think, are pretty unique in having such low reserves. Your average, I mean, John will know better than this than me, but your average European country has something like 2 or 3 months worth of gas supplies in reserves. I think Britain's got something like 2 or 3 days worth in reserves. So we are particularly vulnerable. And that is the difficult problem the government faces right now. We've had Boris Johnson going to New York, where he's saying, literally saying to the world, why can't you be more like Britain? Why don't you guys follow a net zero pledge like us? And the polite answer to that is that countries also have a duty to make sure that their communities have got enough access to fuel and that fuel is affordable. So energy is a delicate balancing act. If you go headlong towards net zero, if you go headlong towards decarbonisation, you risk overlooking security of supply. And when gas prices spike, as gas prices always do, you're left a bit more exposed. I mean, typically you would rely on coal if gas price spiked. But you can't rely on coal if you don't have much coal, and Britain doesn't have much coal.
James, it's an interesting juxtaposition which Fraser touches on there, which is that we have the Prime Minister on his trip to the US talking about lots of things in terms of green energy and net zero, yet he is flying back to a far less sunny picture in terms of all these warning signs we're seeing.
Yeah, I think the argument that greater reliance on gas is the answer to gas shortages and gas price spikes at the moment, I'm not entirely persuaded of that argument. I think in some ways, in terms of a domestic politics of this. The winner out of this current situation is nuclear energy, which becomes more appealing as the greenest way of securing what you might call kind of baseload supply. So when renewables dip for various reasons, you would have nuclear to pick up the baseload. I think I think there'll be more people arguing for greater nuclear at the end of this. I think the other big question of this is this energy price rise a transitory phenomenon because demand has got going quicker than supply has returned? Or are we moving into an era where energy is going to be more expensive? Because if it isn't a transitory price spike, then that is going to have profound implications for inflation. You know, already you've got the Bank of England saying that it expects that inflation will be, well, it accepts that inflation could be at 4% until the summer of next year because of this increase in energy prices. You know, the economists think that if the energy price cap goes up by another 20% in April, as the energy companies want, you know, that on its own is 0.3% on inflation.
John, the head of Ofgem told MPs this week that he didn't think it was transitory. What do you make of that?
I think a lot of it is transitory. I think we're going to have a very, very difficult winter ahead. There is a global shortage of gas and the price is rising to ration that. It's rising to encourage people to reduce their gas demand over the next 3 to 6 months. And I think beyond that, we are likely to see the industry respond. We're likely to see an increase in gas supplies next year. And I would expect that by winter 2022-23, that supply will be much more plentiful and that prices will be significantly lower than they are today. But we do have to get through this winter first. I think the challenge with that is we need people to use a bit less gas and electricity over the next 3 to 4 months. The easy way to do that is to allow prices to rise, but that is politically sensitive. We need prices to rise. We need people to turn their thermostats down by half a degree or a degree over the course of the next 3 to 4 months. And then we will get through the, you know, then there will not be a problem in terms of gas availability. That's very difficult to do politically. It has shades of Jimmy Carter and the 1979-1980 energy crisis. And I think Britain's politicians are understandably uncomfortable about talking about that.
James, do you think that's something the government will go nearer, as John Wright?
Oh, no. I mean, anyone who's been a Westminster journalist knows there's always a kind of certain winter game of, you know, can you persuade someone, a government minister, suggest that people should put a sweater on rather than turn the heating on? I mean, that is very difficult. I mean, you look at the steps the government is trying to take to try and protect low-income households from this. You know, the energy price cap will stay in place. But I think the challenge you've got is what happens with the weather is going to be a huge factor here. If we have a cold winter across the Northern Hemisphere, this gas crunch is going to get much, much worse. And then I also would add in the geopolitical factor here. I mean, you know, I don't think it's the main driver of prices, but it's undoubtedly a factor that the Russian government are very keen to get Nord Stream 2 approved, and so they're therefore keen to make Europe feel the absence of Russian gas at the moment. So you have this combination of both domestic politics and geopolitics, both complicating the situation quite considerably.
John's point is quite serious here. He's saying that the government needs people to use less energy, that energy is going to become a lot more expensive, that will discourage people from turning up the heating. The problem, of course, is that in this country we have between 30 and 50,000 people die of a cold each year in terms of excess winter deaths. It's an absolutely appalling statistic. I mean, as a proportion of the population, Brits are more likely than Norwegians to die of the cold, and believe me, it gets cold up there in Scandinavia. So I do think John is right in saying that we're heading towards a very difficult political situation, because let's remember, in a few weeks' time, we're going to get the biggest sort of jamboree in the world over all of this in Glasgow with COP26 and the government saying, let's rush towards net zero, isn't this great? Now, our leading article in The Spectator this week says that a quarter of energy bills are accounted for not for fuel costs, but by energy levies, the various green levies that the government now foists upon energy consumers in order to pay for whatever the government's environmental priorities would be. Now, if that price is discouraging older people from turning up the heating in a country where tens of thousands die from excess winter deaths of various descriptions, then you do enter very difficult political territory. And the risk, I think, is that this will get worse. I mean, John says it's transitory, but I think, John, you're right, if I heard you right, John, you were saying by transitory, we're talking weeks and months of higher prices. So you can well see a situation where in Glasgow, the COP26 is meeting in a country in the middle of a fuel crisis where people are worried about being able to pay the fuel bills at a time when Britain is setting itself up as an example to the world.
John, do you think there could be a political problem there? Do you think that a lot of things the government's going to be talking about at COP26 could be harder to land and more grinding on the public with the backdrop of the prices staying as they are?
Yeah, very much so. Because I think you've got a very poisonous cocktail here. You've got rising gas and electricity prices. You've got rising food prices. You've got the phasing out of the increase in universal credit. And you've got a national insurance increase scheduled for next April. So you've got quite a big impact on the cost of living. And at the same time, you're going to have ministers, instead of talking about energy affordability, they're going to be talking about long-term issues to do with climate change. So I think there is a very strong presentational problem there. And I do think that ministers are at the moment reluctant to grasp the scale of the energy problem that they're facing over the next 6 months.
6 months is a very long time for a government. And, when Boris was asked about it this week in New York, he was saying, oh, it's like everybody reaching for the kettle and putting it on at the same time. There's a surge. That surge lasts for minutes. If this surge lasts for 6 months, then the government really, I think, will be in for a lot of trouble. The big question is whether Labour can take advantage of this. Because Labour, of course, has backed every single one of these government policies. And in this way that they kind of egg the government on, it's difficult for them to turn this into a political disadvantage for the government. But I think we're entering a just fascinating period where, you know, the world of energy is so interesting. Energy has gone through a revolution in the last 10 years. The fracking technology, the horizontal drilling, the kind of technology that the world has embraced has really turned this whole conversation on its head. And now we're having conversations in Britain, very interesting ones, like where is our nuclear supply? Why isn't it as big as France? Are we too dependent on gas? What do we do when the wind stops blowing and the renewables are wind down? For so long, this has been a relatively abstract conversation where specialists like John will have known the terrain, but the rest of us don't really need to worry because energy has been reasonably cheap. Now we're entering a period where energy is becoming hugely political. And the resources that we use to keep the lights on will have massive salience for the public. We should fasten our seatbelts because this is going to be a fascinating ride.
And John, just finally, do you think that we could see blackouts potentially this winter?
I think that's exceptionally unlikely. There are a lot of steps that both the government and Ofgem and the generators can take to keep the lights on. I do think that both gas and electricity prices will probably have to rise, and they will have to rise much more than the government and Ofgem are currently indicating. That will be the price of keeping the lights on and making sure that there is zero chance of them going off is substantially higher gas and electric bills this winter.
Thank you, John. Thank you, James. And thank you, Fraser. And thank you for listening.
Really can't stay.
But baby, it's cold outside.
I've got to go away.
But baby, it's cold outside.